listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes, 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 yes! It hits the back of the net! Oh my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a headshot! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh! You will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
Could your 14-year-old son be worth $2.4 million? If he's got the skills to pay those bills, Manchester City are interested as they sign up the next Messi for a deal set to be worth £2.5 million. Problems with the World Cup draw could loom for England and the other European sides as a slight alteration to the draw process it takes this week means we could end up with a stellar group of death. A Neymar or Bale, which one would you rather have in your fantasy lineup at the moment? Gareth Bale, a hat-trick on the weekend. Neymar in a Barca side that are looking a little iffy at the moment. Let us know here at World Football Daily and get in contact with us all week. As always, welcome to Tuesday's edition of the show. I'm Oliver the Juice Wilson, bringing you the news and the many views from around the world of football. I'm delighted to say that Rafa's got a tip-top guest lined up for you to have a listen to today. Mr. Robin Berner will be joining us here on World Football Daily in just a few minutes to talk all things French football. We've got a full list of midweek French football, and Robin's going to be taking us through some of the big games this week coming out of Ligue 1. We have Premier League football as well. It starts tonight. It finishes tomorrow. One game this evening. A full schedule of games tomorrow night. We'll be talking a little bit about that on the show as well. And of course, I want to get into what happened to Thomas Gravesen. If anybody remembers him, there's a very interesting story that was released today about how much he's now worth and what he's doing with his life. Now, everybody remembers, if anybody can remember what Thomas Gravesen looked like, he was the really intimidating Danish powerful, bald central midfielder that used to play for Everton and actually spent some time at Real Madrid as well. We'll talk about that a little later on in the show here on World Football Daily. I'm not going to lie, I cannot wait to get into chatting with our guests for today. I can't wait to have a quick chat with Kim Tate a little later on, who should be joining us to talk all things football in general, to be honest. We always talk to her about Mexican football, but she's a woman that has a wealth of knowledge about football from around the globe. But I'm delighted to say that now it's my pleasure to hand over to producer and, of course, my great co-host here on the show, Rafa, who will be chatting and who has been chatting with the great from goal.com, Mr. Robin Berner. Rafa, take us away, man. Take us through those delights of French football.
Bonjour, c'est Raphaël Gonzalez du World Football Daily. Et aujourd'hui, nous parlons avec mon ami et l'éditeur du goal.com français. Okay, that's about as far as I can take my AP French from high school, and I apologize. I do apologize to all you francophones out there for butchering the beautiful language. That is French. It is me, and yes, I am filling in for Ollie still for the rest of this week, and I believe the rest of next week, but we'll see when Ollie comes back. It's okay. Don't worry. I know. We'll get him back. Anyways, today on the show, we bring on the brilliant French football writer for Goal.com and dear friend of the show. It is my pleasure to bring you Robin Berner, who, although he wasn't born in the USA, he is a big Bruce Springsteen fan, as his Twitter account says. So, which is also a slight connection to our show in the sense that the original father of our show, the great Stephen Cohen, was a huge Bruce Springsteen fan. So, Robin, first things first, welcome. What is your favorite Springsteen song?
That's probably the hardest question you're going to ask me all day. it was The River that got me into Springsteen, so I would say The River.
I was kind of going through my Springsteen for the past hour just to get prep for you, Rob. And I hope you appreciate that. I was getting my Thunder Road on and all that stuff. Born in the USA, of course. I wanted to drop a couple lines for you just to make you feel at home. So
that was really nice.
No problem.
That was excellent too.
All right, so. Let's get into the real football, though. We talked about last week on our show, Robin, but it was more about, well, it was when we covered German football. This week, we're going to start somewhat in the similar situation, where we're going to kind of kick things off by asking, what is the likelihood of Paris Saint-Germain going undefeated this season in Ligue 1? They took in a class, or they look like they're in a class of their own these days, in Ligue 1, Robin, especially with the 4-0 drubbing of Lyon. And they don't even look, they didn't even look that good on the night, to be honest, but they just look like they are literally in a class of their own in Ligue 1.
Yeah, certainly on Sunday night, they really flexed their muscles and showed how impressive a team they are. Collectively, they're just so powerful. They're certainly a level above just about everybody else in the league at the moment. And it's difficult to see them actually losing a match. That said, they've still got to play another 20-odd matches this season, and it will be very difficult for them to concentrate fully on remaining undefeated in Ligue 1, particularly when the Champions League rolls around in the spring, and there's maybe a few more difficult fixtures around that. For example, they play Monaco and Marseille around their last 16 fixture, I believe. So those will be difficult matches. Certainly, there is a possibility of them going undefeated for the whole season, and people are starting to talk about that. But I think Laurent Blanc's playing it down at the moment, and I think that's quite a sensible move for him, because if they were to do that, it would be such a huge achievement.
Now, a couple follow-up questions with some PSG things. Where it seemed like Laurent Blanc was a bit of a stopgap for the Parisian side, flooded with cash, looking for the next big name to come along, I feel like Blanc has proved himself. He's definitely proved himself to me. I personally thought that he was a stopgap. But like I said, he's proved himself a bit at PSG. And he looks like just the man to keep the club firing on all cylinders in all competitions. How is Blanc being looked at by his owners, by the fans, and by his own team?
Well, you're absolutely right when you say that initially Blanc was a stopgap for PSG. They had set their sights long-term on Arsene Wenger, who it seems is probably out of their reach at the moment, because it seems like he's going to sign a new deal with Arsenal. And given Blanc's performance, I don't think PSG can have any sort of complaints about how he's done. Certainly the owners are really impressed by him, they've been extremely impressed, and they are set to sign, or they are set to offer him a new long-term contract, which includes substantially increased wages, which is a testament to just how well he's done over the course of the last 3 or 4 months. The fans have obviously grown to him. They're not going to complain about a team who have gone unbeaten under his stewardship so far. And I think the players are also warming to him. Certainly, all of the star men who were perhaps the players that Blanc might have had problems with, you know, your Zlatan Ibrahimovic's, your Edison Cavani's, they all seem to be quite happy with him too. So everything seems to be really sweet in Paris at the moment.
Now, I could be wrong when I say this, so please correct me if I am. Was it PSG who essentially came out and put an all starting 11 that had not one French player in it?
That's right. It was the first time a Paris Saint Germain team had ever started without a French player. That was on Sunday against Lyon.
And is that, I mean, is that taken, you know, how is that taken by the general French footballing public? I guess, I mean, are they kind of upset by that, or is that just kind of coming with the times these days?
It's not actually the first time it's happened in France. Marseille did it a few years ago when they played Auxerre, but that's the only precedent. And in terms of what the public think, it's one of these mixed things. Paris Saint-Germain fans don't particularly care, to be honest. They just want to see a winning team out there, and particularly if they're going to win comfortably. On the other hand, I think there's a little bit of a almost jealousy from other supporters that PSG can go out and buy such a select group of players from all around the world. And that certainly impacted on making them such a dominant force in France. So while Paris Saint-Germain fans are happy, the French public as a whole is maybe a little bit more sceptical and certainly takes on winning over.
Now, with Zlatan taking the summer off, essentially, I'm a huge fan of Zlatan, the ninja that is Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Will we see a refocused or a re-energized Ibra looking to prove a point to the world, basically saying to us all, this is what you are missing this summer as he goes through the rest of the Ligue 1 season and even Champions League?
Yeah, I think the Champions League's where he's going to earn his kudos this season. So I think you can really look for Zlatan to be a huge factor, certainly next year after the winter break. Obviously, he's enjoying an absolutely stellar season domestically. He's been at the peak of his game. He's been absolutely outstanding. And I think, while the lack of the World Cup is perhaps starting to be an issue for him, I think he's just generally in a very good vein of form at the moment. And this is just Zlatan at his very best, to be honest.
Mm. Now, let's jump across to the other new money in Ligue 1 these days, Monaco. Monaco have come out and stated that Falcao is not for sale. In fact, one of the owners or decision makers has come out and said that he had had dinner with Falcao and family and that the striker loves the city and the situation that he finds himself in. Now, usually, when you know the higher-ups in the club come out and say this, this means just about the opposite in football. So my question to you, Robin, is this a ploy to hike up potential price tags for Falcao come January, or is Falcao going to stay bedded in with Monaco throughout the rest of the season?
Well, I'd be hugely surprised if Monaco decided to sell Falcao in January. I don't think it was part of the long-term strategy to sell him. I think they signed him as a long-term signing. He's their central figure, or at least he was in the summer. I think problems perhaps have started to rise over the course of the last 2 weeks. 2 weeks ago in Nantes, he was substituted by Claudio Ranieri, and there are rumours that he didn't take this well, and he's had a bit of a fallout with the coach, which is allegedly part of the reason why he's not going to start tonight against Nice. But just how much of this is true and how much of this is media scaremongering, it's difficult to tell. It's been a difficult story because obviously you've got such a draw in Spain from Real Madrid, who are clearly intent on signing him, or were intent on signing him in the summer, and they were obviously outbid. And I think there's still a little bit of media games being played by the Spanish press and perhaps Real Madrid as well. I would be very surprised if Falcao was to leave Monaco in January, and even in the summer I'd be quite surprised if he was to depart.
Now, moving on, you did mention that we do have a full slate of Ligue 1 games this Tuesday, Wednesday. It's not often that we hear of fights in France, especially due to footballing reasons. But recently, there was an arrest and a scuffle that literally broke out in a Lille airport when Marseille came to town with former Lille man Florian Thauvin. Now, is Thauvin that missed, or was it just that sour of a departure when the French international left for Marseille?
Well, I think it was the manner of his time in Lille. Although he signed for Lille around a year ago, in the last January transfer window, he never actually played for them. Lille loaned him straight back out to Basel, where he was at a hugely successful second half of the season. And then in the summer, when he was due to go back to Lille, Marseille's interest started to rise. Marseille were offering him far, far, far better terms than had been offered in Lille. And there was a feeling in the north that he was being prized away from the club unfairly. And there was also a feeling that the young winger, had perhaps engineered this a little bit himself, and that it was more out of greed than out of footballing ambition. Mm. So there's a lot of animosity towards him in Lille at the moment, and that was certainly played out last night when the Lille fans said some pretty vile things about him at the airport.
Now, actually looking at the game, what can we expect from Lille-Marseille? I mean, these two are well... In recent memory, have been at the top of Ligue 1 for as long as I can remember. Is this going to be a cagey match, or can we expect some sort of excitement with both these teams? I mean, well, especially Lille trying to keep up with PSG.
I think Lille's main priority will be their standard sort of game plan. They'll try to keep things tight at the back. They've got an absolutely exceptional defensive record at the moment. They've not conceded at all in the last 10 games, which is utterly remarkable. They'll try and keep it tight and try to be efficient on the break. Marseille probably won't try to be particularly aggressive either. They'll be fairly cagey. So I don't expect it to be a particularly open affair. It might not be the best match in the world to watch. But it will certainly be an intriguing tactical match, particularly if it's tight towards the end. And obviously, like you say, Lille will be have half an eye on closing the gap to Paris Saint-Germain at the top of the table.
Okay, a couple more questions that I need to kind of get through. Newly promoted Nantes takes on Alejandro Bedoya this year. What sort of praise or criticism has the American had during his time in Ligue 1?
Well, generally, I think he's adapted quite well to French football, but it's been difficult for him because international matches have really broken up the schedule, which means that obviously travelling back to the States is quite an arduous task in midweek. So coming back, he's perhaps only been on the bench, so he's not had the sort of fluidity and continuity of game time that he would probably like. But when he's been on the field, he's been rather impressive for them. And I think certainly towards the start of next year, you'll see him really, really come to life. He's been looking lively in France so far, and he's generally won over the public, particularly in Nantes.
Now, our host, like I said, Ollie, he's still working with us, and he's still doing the show. He asked me to ask you if you have any good kind of tips, pointers, or just things to look out for with the Bordeaux tie with Guignol. That's primarily because he'll be covering this game for the little extra work that he's doing on the side here for the next couple of weeks. So what can I tell Ollie about the Guignol-Bordeaux match?
Well, I think it's one of these games that you're looking for a home team who are Guingamp here at home, and they tend to be quite strong at home. They have a striker called Mustafa Yatabari who's good at getting himself into positions. However, taking chances he's perhaps not quite so strong at. But Guingamp are a team who are going to probably create chances. They'll try to take the ball the game to Bordeaux, and they'll certainly look quite dangerous, I would imagine. On the other hand, Bordeaux have had a very hectic schedule over the course of the season so far. They've obviously been involved in the Europa League. Their squad's not particularly deep, but doesn't have particularly good strength. So they might be a bit fatigued. That could be an issue for them. On the Bordeaux team, the player to look out for really is Ludovico Braniak, who is a Polish international midfielder. Mm-hmm. He's the guy who provides the sort of creativity and spark to their team. On the left of their midfield, you might look toward Nicolas Maurice-Bellet. If he gets the start, he could be a dangerous threat too. But Bordeaux are a team who tend to play defensively, and that could be a fairly cagey performance from them.
And two more questions, and this one's kind of a quick one. The three newly promoted sides in France seem to be doing fairly well. Is this kind of par for the course in Ligue 1? Do we normally see newly promoted sides that far up the table? Maybe it's early in the season, but it just seems like you're not going to really see Hull City, making a push up like Monaco are doing, or Nantes are doing, or Guignol are doing.
No, you're absolutely right. They're doing exceptionally well. I think all three are in the top 10 at the moment, and they've all adapted to life very, very quickly. Monaco are obviously a bit of a special case because they've had so much money invested in them. However, the other two have adapted extremely well, and they have to be praised. It's quite common for teams for one or two teams in France to do reasonably well in their first season after promotion from Ligue 2. However, to have three all in the top 10 at this stage of the season is absolutely exceptional. But it's certainly not uncommon for them to do at least okay.
Fair enough. All right, and finally, I'm going to let you go on this one, but you've come out on Twitter to say that Hull manager Steve Bruce has told Daily Mail that null striker Filip Djokovic, I'm sorry, I just butchered that, is a target for the club, would be a great addition for Hull City Football Club. Now, our audience can follow you on Twitter as well, at rbairner, at rbairner. And they can actually see the extended conversation you had with other guests on our show, like Ben Littleton and other people like that, around this topic and this potential move. But what makes Philippe the perfect fit for the Premiership and this newly promoted side?
Well, he's an excellent striker. He's very clinical in front of goal. I don't know if there's been too many other players in Ligue 1 this season who have been quite as sharp in front of goal, apart from Ibrahimovic, Cavani and Falcao. Below him, Djordjevic has probably been the outstanding forward. He's just very sharp in the box. He'll take chances. He's reasonably good in the air. It's something that he could perhaps improve on a little bit. But his movement's quite sharp. He's quite strong. He's just a sort of modern-day striker. He's very mobile. I just can see him doing very well in the Premier League if he was to go there. I'd be quite surprised if he went to Hull, to be honest. I think he's a better forward than that. I know some teams in Italy have also been looking at him. Roma, for example. So if he was to go to Hull, it would be an absolutely huge coup for them. And it would certainly be one of the best pieces of business in the January window, particularly since he's out of contract in the summer and is likely to be cheaper as a result.
Robin, I greatly appreciate you making the time for us today, and I'm sorry. I tell all of our guests about one or two topics that we might cover, and I know I covered a little bit of the PSG in our emails, but I was definitely all over the place on this interview, and I apologize for that. But you rolled with the punches very well, and thank you very much. I don't know what else. I was going to try to come up with a Bruce Springsteen quote for that, but I got nothing right off the top of my head. My improvisational skills are lacking at this point in time. But again, Robin, I do appreciate it, and thank you so much for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks very much. Bye.
Take care, Robin. That was Robin Bairner of Goal.com. He is a French football writer. He joins us from France. I mean, you can't get much better than that. I've been trying to jump into French football much more this season. I find it more entertaining. And although PSG seem like they're running away with it and seem like they can go unbeaten, I just feel like there's more coming from France. And it's just generally very entertaining football. So I'm very appreciative of Ligue 1 this season and very excited to jump into as much football as I can get my teeth into. Hopefully you enjoy that too, Ollie. I'm not sure whether or not his explanation of Gagnon and Bordeaux is good enough for you. I thought he gave you a couple good pointers and people to look for. But other than that, I mean, I'm really, really focused on how Marseille will do and see if they're going to push PSG to maybe make a couple of mistakes. Other than that, let's go, Ali Bedoya. Come on, Rangers. That's what I'm really doing today. I'll be watching my Rangers take on Arbroath, I think. That's my day, Ali. What's your day like?
Thanks, Raf, and thanks there to Robin Bairner of Goal.com joining us to talk all things a little bit of French football and, of course, a Ligue 1. Robin giving me plenty of advice on that Guingamp-Bordeaux game that I'm actually covering tomorrow night. There is, of course, fixtures all the way through this week. Lille take on Marseille. Nantes take on Valenciennes tonight. Nice take on Monaco. Ajaccio take on Bastia, Guingamp, Bordeaux tomorrow, as is Montpellier, Lorient, Stade Rennes take on Saint-Étienne, Sochaux take on Stade de Reims, Evian take on PSG, and then Thursday night, Toulouse taking on Olympique Lyonnais. Lyon, of course, in the games coming up this week in midweek in French football, and plenty of midweek fixtures. We haven't got Champions League this week, but there are, of course, plenty of games to be discussing about. Of course, the ever-efficient Bundesliga not giving us a midweek fix of football, unfortunately, when France and England do as well. And similarly, the Italians unable to squeeze us in a little bit of football in our midweek just to keep things going. So we do have to make do with just Ligue 1 and Premier League this week in the midweek. But I'm sure we're all very excited to see that and see what happens, what will go down this midweek after hectic weekends in both Ligue 1 and the Premier League, both covered by Rafa this week in the last 2 days or so here on World Football Daily. I did say yesterday that I was going to be joined by the lovely and all things South American, Central American football correspondent Kim Tate on the show today. The last couple of shows we've had Gio joining us, and Gio saving my bacon, so to speak, stopping me from being here rambling on my Todd and being able to have a chat about all things football, and to kind of get to know Gio a little bit more as the editor of the Kickabout blog on worldfootballdaily.com. Kim was meant to join me today. Unfortunately, because she is such a busy bee, she's probably just on the beach with Carlos Bocanegra, I guess, just hanging out. I know those two do a lot of work together, Kim and Carlos. Or she's probably studying up. Big congratulations to her for getting the job as the Telegraph's correspondent on all things Costa Rica in the build-up to the World Cup. But Kim, obviously too busy to join us today here on World Football Daily. Very sad to say that you are limited to just myself for the final few bits of the show this week. We would love to do a little bit of IKTS, but unfortunately I'll only be giving you my picks, which would be a little sad. You know, I don't want to bogart it. I don't want to be. I don't want to seem like I'm just, you know, telling you what to go for. I'm no Ray Winston giving you the best odds on all things football at the moment. I'm just one man with his opinions and on what the scores are going to be in the Premier League tonight and tomorrow. Although I will say that Crystal Palace West Ham is a slightly forgettable game for a Tuesday night. Let's put it that way. I'm not sure there's going to be too many people tuning in to that one. Tomorrow night, a feast of games, though, in the Premier League. Liverpool take on Norwich, Manchester United take on Everton, Arsenal take on Hull, Southampton meet Villa, Stoke take on Cardiff, Sunderland take on Chelsea, Swansea take on Newcastle, West Brom meet Manchester City, and Fulham take on Tottenham. A big game for AVB after that 2-2 draw, and a nightmare week for him so far in terms of dealing with the press and the post-match fallout for that. Could be a nightmare situation for England in the World Cup. We'll talk about that a little later on in the show, where I'll tell you what the plan is for the World Cup. Does it seem that FIFA are just really looking for a way to screw England over once again in the World Cup? Well, maybe not so, but we'll have a look at how that draw is shaping up as we get ready for the World Cup draw taking place this week. 3 days' time, and we will know the groups and seedings for the World Cup next summer. Cannot wait to get into that and watch that draw live this week. I want to talk a little bit of Spanish football because, of course, there is all the talk at the moment in La Liga of Atletico Madrid up there, right level on points with Barcelona. Both played 15, won 13, drawn 1, lost 1. Barca losing this weekend to Athletic Bilbao. Many people shocked by it. Some people saying, and I saw the front page of the kind of local Catalan sporting newspaper that said, this is not our Barca. Many people going frustrated of how Barca are playing at the moment under Tata Martino. Now, surely, last year we were quite overly critical of Barca. You know, they're still a wonderful side to watch. They still can be very impressive on their day. But we were saying, you know what, this is a team that just isn't performing like it had been. It's slower. The passing is maybe, the play's a little more direct, but They're this season than it was last year. But last year they were so slow and a little bit dry, just kind of kicking the ball about, and, you know, miscellaneous passing square, left, right, Xavi and Iniesta not as incisive with their balls forward as they were last year. This year under Tata Martino, it's all changed. And I think we all said that they needed a slight change to reinvigorate them, so to speak, because we've spoken a number of times on World Football Daily about how teams in general, the apathy that can creep in, the complacency that can creep in when continued success arises. You know, to an extent, we've probably seen it with Manchester United over the years. We've obviously seen it with Barcelona over the last few years, and I think there's a possibility we could still see it with Bayern Munich. Of course, they're being run, their show being run by Pep Guardiola, and Pep has changed things around and given it a little bit of fresh legs, so to speak, down at Bayern. Obviously inspired last year greatly by wanting to get one over Borussia Dortmund. But Guardiola's gone in, changed that playing style slightly. He's got rid of the double pivot in the Bayern midfield, and a lot of people saying that yes, it maybe didn't work immediately as well as people had hoped, and you know, they had that draw with Freiburg, which everybody said was unbelievable and unforgivable. But in fact, it is a way to keep everything kind of fresh and new, and to keep players interested. Now, I think at Barca you have a problem in that it's not the players are disinterested. Don't get me wrong, but when you lose the players that Barca have got at the moment, you know, no Dani Alves, no Lionel Messi, no Arbeloa, there's definitely some players lacking in that squad at the moment. Take some of the best players in that squad out, combine that with the fact that you've got Xavi and Iniesta that do look a little more tired, a little more fragile than they have done. You've got Neymar, who started well with Barca, but is still getting into the rhythm of Spanish football and a new side. You've got Fabregas and Alexis Sanchez, and I have to say Alexis Sanchez has been wonderful for Chile and has had some really nice performances for Barca this season. But this isn't a 100% Barca side in terms of strength. This isn't a 100% Barca side in terms of the playing style they play, because it has changed under Tata Martino. It is more direct. They're trying these long balls across the pitch, which it is not the Barca way that we know and were loving maybe 3-4 years ago. It's a different approach, and maybe, though, that is essential and necessary for Tata to keep these players interested. Now, combine all of that with the fact that this is also a side that, rather than solving some of the problems that they've got, bringing maybe another central midfielder, obviously they brought in Alex Song, but and obviously they need help at the back as well. They need another centre back at least to go alongside Piqué, because Puyol just is getting far too old these days to do that. They haven't addressed these problems in the same way Arsenal haven't when they brought in Ozil, and everybody's forgotten about the problems that they had. Now Arsenal at least are playing nice enough football that they're not getting caught out, and the players that we thought were maybe not up to the standards of Arsenal in the top Premier League challenge are actually proving us wrong at this point in time. Look at Per Mertesacker. Everybody's been expecting him to kind of stumble and fumble through the Premier League, and at the moment he's looking like a very strong, competent centre back indeed. I think Barca, on the other hand, don't have that. You know, there's the apathy, the complacency from some of the veterans. I think there's obviously been a struggle in terms of managerial power in that club. When you look at how Guardiola ruled the roost, and how Villanova, not quite so like Guardiola, in control of that side, and in the same way now Tata Martino as well. I guarantee that some of those elder statesmen, the Xavis, the Iniestas, the Messis of that side, probably have a lot of say and influence in and around the dressing room, almost like a Madrid, so to speak, with maybe some of the older guys being a little more outspoken. We have seen that at Madrid in the past, but not so much with Barca. I wonder if this is maybe causing a problem as well in that dressing room. But either way, this isn't the usual Barca side. Still top of the league. Let's not beat around the bush here. They are still top of the league. They've still only lost one game. This 1-0 loss away at Athletic Bilbao is a Bilbao side that is refinding its feet after a year or so of tension and of unrest, especially with the start of last season with Bielsa. And the problems went on with Llorente not being allowed to play, with Javi Martinez leaving as well. Such as some big losses for this Athletic Club side. And they're refinding their feet, especially with players like Munain and Mikel Rico. It's in a good run of form at the moment, Athletic Club Bilbao. So a loss away from home against Bilbao is not the worst thing in the world for Barca, but at the same time, I think it's the manner in which they're playing that is causing the problems, not the fact that they're not winning games or anything like that. Would love to know your thoughts if you are worried about Barca, especially at the moment without Lionel Messi for the next few weeks. Still Messi, of course, still out injured after getting caught just before the international break. Let us know. Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter. 310-909-8483 is, of course, the rant line. And there is the Facebook page as well. But are you worried about Barca at all? No need to be worried about Real Madrid. Gareth Bale getting his first Los Blancos hat-trick in a 4-0 win against Valladolid. Wasn't the most impressive hat-trick. You know, it was quite funny. Bale said, you know, I feel I've started well, but there's definitely more to come. And I don't think we have seen, you know, the same sorts of strikes, the same sorts of runs that we saw him take off and lead on a charge when he was at Tottenham Hotspur playing in the Premier League. There's a goal that stands out in particular that sums up Bale's time in the Premier League when he was at his peak. That was that goal against Norwich, I believe it was last winter. I think I was sat in a bar in London with a friend. I'd just finished working at the Emirates. Norwich Tottenham was the 5:30 kickoff, and I sat down and we were having a pitcher of beer watching this game, and I watched Bale go off in this run. turned to my my friend and said, mate, he's going to score here. And he said, nah, he's rubbish. My friend was an Arsenal fan. I said, he's going to score. Just watch. And he just drove forward, skinned about three defenders, and smashed it into the bottom corner past John Ruddy. An incredible, wonderful goal, wonderful dribble, and a wonderful finish. Overall, the complete package in terms of an individual effort. We haven't seen that yet from Bale, but what we have seen is we've seen him connecting with and scoring some easier goals because he at least, though, is very much connecting with his teammates. And I think that's a really important thing to notice, that Bale is actually really fitting well into the makeup of this Real Madrid side. Now, take into the fact as well that Ronaldo didn't play on the weekend, and Bale was able to fill in that void and be a very big part of the three goals, but not just that, but a big part of the build-up play in that game as well. I think shows that maybe, unlike Barca, where if Messi goes down, everybody looks around and wonders who's going to pick up that slack in terms of the role that Messi plays. Madrid, at least, especially with Di Maria in the form that he's been so far this season, Madrid at least have a player who, when Ronaldo's out, they can almost put in him so comfortably to replace him. That was obviously a highlight of buying Gareth Bale. Now, we all thought about Ronaldo and Bale together, what a dream that would be. And, of course, Di Maria's start to this season has shown that he's very much still in that mix as well. But when one of those players is out, the other can slot into it so comfortably, and they don't lose a beat at the moment. They showed that on the weekend, a magnificent 4-0 win, trouncing Gareth Bale with the hat-trick, and of course Karim Benzema adding one as well, and how much he needs that goal. Benzema, still not the most popular person in the Madrid camp in terms of the fans, but 8 goals this season so far in 14 games. So we're starting to see a return of Karim Benzema back to his best, especially without Higuain there. That battle for competition, neither player getting extended runs really in the side last year. I wonder if it's better for Benzema now with Higuain gone. The other debate that's kicking off in and around Spain in terms of the press at the moment, Gareth Bale or Neymar? Now, we all remember the start of this season when Bale was heralded as not being up to scratch after some slightly off performances from him, and Neymar, who hit the ground running with Barca and, of course, scored in El Clasico, and everybody said, oh, look at Neymar taking to La Liga so well. Isn't this fantastic? Well, everybody's kind of, flipped a switch suddenly, and everybody's saying now, oh, Gareth Bale is so much better than Neymar. Now, what do you think about this? Bale or Neymar? Who would you take? Bale, as I said, seems to have fitted in wonderfully. Neymar, on the other hand, is fitted in, I still think, very well, but with a Barca side that, as we said earlier, is kind of starting to crack a bit without that leadership, without that role that Messi plays in there at the moment, and with that confusion that's been off the pitch in terms of managers, with the unfortunate health issues that Tito Villanova has had, with Pep Guardiola leaving, of course, such an icon at the club after what he built there, and with Tata Martino coming in, somebody who, relatively... And, well, I don't think many people were expecting, when you think of managers that will come in to a job the size of Barca, I don't think anybody put Tata Martino down as the immediate first choice. Apparently that decision to bring him had taken place kind of 2 hours after Villanova was forced to leave the club with his health issues. So Bale or Neymar, on an individual basis, they're actually, I think, a lot closer than people might be thinking in terms of the way Madrid are playing at the moment, in terms of what's happening with Barca. I think just the difference is their surroundings. I mean, you can never really compare. It's like Messi and Ronaldo. You know, we always ask that debate, Messi or Ronaldo. But there are so many extra factors that you have to take in. The fact that Messi's been at Barca for so long, that it's a side that's based around him. Ronaldo, on the other hand, very much you get the feeling that wherever he went, he could produce the performances he's putting in. Now, does that make him better, more versatile? Possibly, but is Messi playing better than Ronaldo in the system that he's in? Arguably yes, or has been at least for the last 6-7 years or so. And I think the same thing will be with Bale, but kind of on the reverse. Neymar is playing well in a side that isn't doing too good, much like Ronaldo has been in a very destructive Real Madrid side in terms of on-field and dressing room chemistry. Bale, on the other hand, is playing now in a side that is very much, because it's so based around Ronaldo, is based to his similar traits and his similar qualities. So he stepped into a side that's becoming very much at peace. You know, Isco is getting sorted. Xabi Alonso's back to anchor the midfield with Modric, as we saw on the weekend. You know, this is a Madrid side that so many people wrote off very early on this season. But this is still a Madrid side that I think Rafa's sure and myself is sure are in with a very big shout of lifting La Decima this year. Just was going to take a little bit of time to get the cohesion together. Very interesting to see who people would choose, Neymar or Bale. Let us know. Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter, 310-909-8483 is the rant line, and of course the Facebook page as well. Now, before we wind things down here on World Football Daily for Tuesday's edition of the show and get ourselves off to go and watch Crystal Palace against West Ham, I think not. But before we do wrap things down here on the show, there's a few very interesting things that I'd like to discuss that I've seen in and around the web today. First and foremost, Nike released Nike have released a brand new footballing advert. Now, I've been campaigning for a while now and discussing at great length at some points and probably rambling on far too much about it at some points, about Nike football's adverts that they used to have and how, you know, how fantastic they were, the old school Nike adverts. And there aren't many people that can say that these adverts weren't the business kind of back in the 90s or so. I've said I've wanted to see an interesting and really entertaining one for a long time now. And we do have a close run for those 90s crown. Now, sure, it's got a little bit of golf in. It's a little bit ironic because it's got Rory McIlroy in, and Rory McIlroy couldn't buy a decent shot at the moment with his brand new Nike clubs to save his life. But, and it is about football as well, which is great. And I'm a golf fan. You know, Rafa and I both like to hit the links every so often and, you know, hit an 18 holes and, you know, take 5 hours doing it. But still, may not be great, but I do enjoy the sport, that's for sure. Now, Wayne Rooney and Rory McIlroy have got together to do this, to produce this, in this Nike advert. It's thoroughly entertaining, at least. It's maybe not as enough glam and there's too much CGI in it. But I love the comedy appearance at the end of this advert. So you've got McIlroy steps out onto the tee, you know, oh, and today is Rory McIlroy. Blah, blah, blah. Everybody applauds. He gets up on the tee, gets ready to take a shot. And his playing partner today, Wayne Rooney. McIlroy looks around and sees Rooney kind of walk up. Everyone's a bit like, what's going on here then? Rooney's got a pair of boots on. McIlroy takes his shot. Rooney then pulls a new Nike Auden ball out from his golf bag, puts it down the tee, smashes the ball up the green. And then the rest of it is those two kind of trying to outdo each other, golfer against footballer, with Rooney kicking the ball down the fairway, and McIlroy, you know, playing a bit of pitch and putt almost type of thing. Again, I do still feel that McIlroy would have spent a lot more time in the trees in this advert were it true to real life, and as the Happy Gilmore phrase is, he spends more time in the sand than David Hasselhoff, which, you know, we all know and love Happy Gilmore, I'm sure, but I'm sure more Rory McIlroy would be doing that. Rooney, though, and he kind of start pulling out a few kind of trick shots a bit. Rooney's putting backspin and swerve on his shots, and it all gets to a point, gets down to the 18th. They're both at -9, and Rooney smashes this ball, overhits it, and I think I like this advert so much just for this kind of this little pop up of this guy, because we've not seen him in playing football or doing anything in football for a long time now. But Ronaldo, and I don't mean Cristiano Ronaldo, I mean R9 Ronaldo, the original Ronaldo. Some may call him the chubby Ronaldo, some may even call him the fat Ronaldo, but he is Ronaldo. He's getting interviewed out of the clubhouse, Rooney's overhit this shot, the ball comes down, Ronaldo, off his head, right down next to the hole. Wonderful cameo performance by him, especially when you probably expect it to be Cantona that would be in this Nike advert. He's too busy selling beer over here in England, which again is a fantastic advert. If you can find the Cronenberg advert with Cantona about the farmers being treated like footballers, definitely check it out. But a big fan of seeing Ronaldo getting interviewed by journalists, nodding the ball back onto the green, and Rooney's in prime position to finish off and beat McIlroy. Really like this. We need more of them, though. We need more quality football adverts. Send us any of your ideas of how Nike, Adidas, Puma, Reebok, anybody could start campaigning and creating better adverts for our viewing pleasure. Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter, 310-909-8483 is the rant line, the Facebook page as well. The best advert ideas will get some World Football Daily swag. That could be a t-shirt, that could be some stickers, it could be whatever we can find from Rafa's magic closet of WFD swag. We still think we've got some DVDs in there and whatnot as well. But yeah, best ideas. I've listed off a couple now. Anybody else got anything else for a football advert, send them to the show. We'll read it out on air and we'll have a good chat about it and see. Maybe one day one of them will get made. Finally, I did mention the World Cup draw. Got to talk about this because it could be a nightmare draw for England or anybody else, in fact, as there is a slight alteration in how the draw is going to be done this year. Pot one of the World Cup draw that takes place on December 6th. This week, we find out who's going into what group for the World Cup. Pot 1 sees the top seeds from FIFA's rankings from October. Brazil, Spain, Germany, Argentina, Colombia, Belgium, Uruguay and Switzerland. They are the top ranked sides in FIFA's rankings who qualified for the World Cup. They will be in Pot 1. Pot 2 sees the remaining South American sides and the African sides. So that's Chile, Ecuador, Ivory Coast, Ghana, Algeria, Nigeria and Cameroon. But there will also be one more side put in there. That will come from Pot 4 that's based up of the remaining European sides: Bosnia, Croatia, England, France, Greece, Italy, Holland, Portugal and Russia. And Pot 3, which is obviously the Asian and Australasian and Central American sides. So that is Australia, Iran, Japan, South Korea, Costa Rica, Mexico, Honduras and the US of A. Now, what this means is because a side will be taken out from Pot 4 and put into Pot 3 at random before the draw, this means that England could A, be taken out and put in with in a group, say, with Argentina, Mexico, England, and Holland or Italy or France. In the same way that Holland, Italy or France could be taken out and put into Pot 2, and then you could end up with Brazil, Holland, Italy or France, England, and then Japan or Mexico or the USA. It could be a nightmare situation for some of these sides. I'm sure the USA are probably kind of, they'll take whoever comes. You know, there's no expectation on them. There's not as much pressure, I think, as maybe some of these European sides have on them. And the USA, sod's law will be, they'll end up getting something really nice as well. And Rafa will be laughing all December 7th at that draw when the US get, I don't know, they'll end up getting like Greece and Algeria and, well, I suppose Switzerland is probably the easiest one of those top ones in Pot 1. But it does mean that we could see an immense group of death with some of the biggest sides in Europe being placed with each other alongside a top side from either South America or Africa and a top side from Asia, Australasia or Central America as well. The World Cup draw, remember, taking place, as I say, on December 6th in Brazil. I was actually really hoping to go down to it, but I couldn't actually get the flights in the end and get the time off work, unfortunately. Very busy period indeed for all of us here in the football world, especially with the World Cup draw looming. What is your dream World Cup group of death this year? Pick one from each pot. Send it in. Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter. 310-909-8483 is the rant line, the Facebook page as well. Let us know before the draw. And again, you could get your hands on some WFD swag. I did want to talk about Thomas Gravesen today, but we've actually pretty much run out of time here on World Football Daily because there's plenty of sport to be getting into this evening with the French football and of course with the Premier League game as well. So we will leave it there for today. A big thanks to Robin Berner though once again for joining us. Apologies to you guys for not being able to organise a time with Kim Tate too, and you've had to just listen to me rambling on about football for the last half hour or so. I hope you have enjoyed it though as much as I have had just chatting, well, kind of to myself. It's a little weird, but it's all right. We're always talking about football. Remember to get your emails in, show at worldfootballdaily.com and at WFootballDaily on Twitter. This has been World Football Daily for Tuesday's edition of the show. A big thank you to all that are continuing to listen and all those new listeners that keep signing up with us as well. Take care. Enjoy the football. And remember, the World Cup starts to get really juicy this weekend. We'll be talking about it more throughout the week. Take care. Have a good one.